compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, let's get off to a fast start. Hour two, the number is 888-914-9149. We're going to go to James in Cape Coral, Florida. James, you mentioned just before the break, you're a high school, I think you teach AP Geography, I think you said?
Yeah, and, Human Geo.
Oh, okay, Human Geography, very good. And so you were just bringing up the issue of immigration as an offset to the problem with the low birth rates in this country, and that's about as far as we got. So why don't you take it from there, and let's go.
Okay, yeah. So looking at immigration trends from the last 30 years into the U.S. from places like Latin America and Southeast Asia, I would say that, yeah, it is a bit of an offset. I'm certain it's not the total solution, because looking at native-born births in the United States versus foreign-born births in the United States, it could be the solution for this country, but obviously it's not going to work everywhere else. Now, if you look at the negative population models in places like Western Europe, obviously they're not getting as – they're getting a significant immigration, but it's not enough to really offset what they experience, whereas the U.S. looks like we might be able to stave off that negative population model just a little bit longer because of immigration. And so I guess my question to you is, do you think that immigration from the less developed world can be a solution to and the really the more conservative mindsets that these people carry with them about health and the human family and reproduction? Could that be an answer, or do you think that could be an answer to how we are currently operating as native-born Westerners?
I think so. Now, to make sure I understand the question, are you saying the cultural mores of other countries where they are having more children, and to the extent that people from those countries immigrate here to the U.S., would that affect things in a positive way here? Was that the question you asked? I want to make sure I understood it.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, I would think so. In other words, if people from, say, Nigeria, where the birth rate is higher, it's, I think, likely that people from Nigeria coming here and settling here would continue that trend. But the wild card, it seems to me, is when people from any country where they're traditionally much more open to children than we become here, the wild card, I think, is the assimilation factor. And so when these people come here to the United States, maybe mom and dad and their five kids are doing great, but when those five kids grow up, the cultural pressures and forces that they will experience here in the United States and the way their attitudes will be shaped through the media and the internet and such, I think that's where they could then become like we are here, and they wouldn't necessarily preserve their traditional values from where they came. And I think I don't know how to study that. I don't know how you could study that, I guess, but there's definitely a corrosive effect in this regard in terms of the change of attitudes. So I don't know. Do you know of any tools for measuring that kind of change over time? That would be fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, there are certain kinds of population demographic scales that we use. You can find them pretty easily. I think the CIA World Factbook, which everyone has access to, usually uses those, as in they have all those models posted. That's usually where
what I mean is, and you're right, I'm familiar with those tools, but are you aware of any tools or studies where they measure the change in attitudes of, let's say, somebody from Nigeria or some other country where they have a much more traditional outlook on, say, family and childbearing and marriage, and then over time, how those attitudes change for people who live in the U.S., say, for 20 years or 30 years? I'm not aware of those kinds of studies. Are you?
Yeah. No, unfortunately not. That's why I was asking you, but I think that, and I think that that is certainly, that's interesting to think about as far as the larger picture goes, because immigration is that wild card that we as Americans have that other Western Europeans don't have in as much abundance. Or other countries that have a negative transition model like Russia or Japan. And I just wanted to ask you a second quick question. Talking about the destruction of the family, I think that a lot of the stuff that I've heard from Relevant Radio has been focused more or less on abortion. And this is a very interesting question or issue that you posit today, the destruction of the family, not from the bottom up, but from the top down. So parents who, or grandparents who don't want to be a burden, right? They do the, as you said, like their patriotic duty and ending their lives so that their grandchildren and great-grandchildren can, quote-unquote, live a better life than they did. And obviously, we can just put that to the modern eugenicist movement, now claiming the elderly as well as the young in the womb. And we start to see that in places like Belgium and the Netherlands, which are countries that have fully legalized euthanasia for people who are in situations like that. So, I mean, what would you say is going to be the next steps? I mean, especially with the church, I think that Pope Francis has said many things about the elderly. And so what are some, I guess, resources that we can look to as Catholics in helping curb this top-down approach eugenicism that we're seeing now?
Yeah, that's a big question. I can only offer a few thoughts off the cuff. One, of course, would be very person-specific, and that would be for everyone listening, especially parents, to inculcate in their children a deep respect for human life at all phases, at all stages. It really has to start there. Otherwise, the kids will be brainwashed, you know, when they get into high school and college, and they'll come away from those experiences with less of a respect for human life, I believe. So a big part of the solution will be in the family and parents proactively teaching their children. And one way to do that, by the way, is for the parents themselves to be open to life and to show by example that, you know, having babies is not a problem. It's not the problem. It's part of the solution to the problem. And that will have a positive effect, I should think, on the children. I know it did on me when my mom and dad had 8 children, and I was the oldest of those 8, so I saw it all happen, and it was very impactful to me, although I didn't realize it at the time. I realized that my parents were living out their Catholic faith and demonstrating their faith in God by being open to life. So that helped me personally. That's one area. I think also in the role of the church, of course, would be to be more emphatic on this issue and to really, the pedagogy in say CCD programs and even just on Sunday, the occasional sermons about this issue, I think would go a distance in helping this. But we're up against something that we haven't really seen before, and that is, at least historically, no other human culture has had a mass media like we have now. And so we're up against a mass media with an almost monolithic opposition to many of these more traditional things that we hold dear, but that they don't. So in terms of the movies and the music videos and the music itself and all the things on the internet, not to mention television programs, those also shape people's attitudes. And I don't foresee that we can change that. So we have to work from within, family by family, person by person, I think.
Yeah, it seems almost hypocritical of the state to incentivize people to work their whole lives, contributing to Social Security and things like that. And then once they get to the end of their lives and start to collect, they're starting to incentivize this idea of, well, if you aren't producing, if you don't have a utility value in working for the society, you are deemed therefore worthless. And like your life is now worth less because you cannot work or you do not work.
Right.
Almost at the same time. So there's this dual message, I think, that we're starting to get from particularly Western governments about this issue. So, but yeah. I just wanted
well
to
said.
Put that, I just wanted to posit that to you. And it's certainly food for thought as we continue to fight back against the new morality or lack thereof.
You know what I'd be interested in, James, if you found maybe a used copy online or something of that book by Peter G. Peterson called Gray Dawn, you with your skill set and your training in this area, I think you might find that particularly interesting because it's almost like a time capsule, what was being said about this issue 20-some years ago. And I wonder if you were to share that with some of your students, that could easily spark them to thinking, okay, well, if that's what they saw 20 years ago, what can we see now that's coming over the horizon?
Yeah, certainly. And we already have the factors to show that it may just come true. So, I'm certainly going to look up that book. I have a pen right here. What is the name of it again?
The book is called Gray Dawn, D-A-W-N, and the author is Peter G. Peterson. I think he was like the former Secretary of the Treasury under maybe it was Bill Clinton or the first Bush. In a way that almost doesn't matter, but he does have the chops. He does have the background to talk authoritatively about the numbers. And that's what I found fascinating. James, it's been great talking to you. I'm really glad you called me today. And I look forward to our next conversation. Thank you. We'll go now to New Hope, Minnesota, and talk with you, Don. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to say, James kind of touched on this already, but you were missing a step in your progression for these end-of-life situations that you could see going from it being optional to state-mandated. I think there will come a time where you can opt out of that end-of-life mandate if you are still working and earning a wage.
Okay, yeah, that seems reasonable. And maybe how about one
And
better? You can opt out, but there will be some penalty or there will be some emolument that you won't get if you decide to opt out. Kind of like what's going on with the vaccines. You don't have to get a vaccine, but you're going to have to get tested every day, and that test costs $15 and you're going to have to pay for it. You don't have to get the vaccine, but you know what I'm saying? And another that could be another step along the way where it just is made more difficult for people who opt out.
I can see that, but then to take it to the extreme, I don't know if you're familiar with this episode of Star Trek Next Generation, but this is a perfect
I know
example.
somebody who will be. I have a certain someone right here who will
Well,
probably
anyway,
know.
what it comes down to is this whole society, when the person reached the age of 60, had to submit to basically euthanasia. And it got to be a celebration of that person's life. It was something that all the families looked forward to. And it didn't matter if you were still productive or not. And the doctor on the Enterprise was saying how angry she was at this because he had so much more to give and that it shouldn't be. And she was trying to do everything she could to keep him from going through with this. But his family saw it as a slap in the face. We're here to honor him, and this is his duty because it's for the good of the family. That I could see that progression go all the way to that extreme.
There was a movie about that that came out in the 70s called Logan's Run, and it pivoted on that very issue. And when you reached a certain age, that was it. Your time was up.
And her point, too, was he's being productive. He's in the middle of important research. Who's going to carry on his research? And he said, oh, well, it just goes to the next guy in line.
Yeah,
So they had
you're right.
argument for everything.
Well, it will be a very persuasive pressure brought if this happens. I hope it doesn't, but if it does happen, it will be very persuasive to people to be told you had a long life, you had your chance, you enjoyed all the things this world has to give you, and now it's time to make room for the younger generation. It wouldn't be fair for you to not do that. You don't want to be a burden on your family, do you? Nobody wants to be a burden on anybody. So those heartstring kind of arguments will be very persuasive, I believe, if and when this should arise. I mean, we see it now, but I think if it
But people
becomes
don't
institutionalized.
understand. They don't understand the opposite, and that's why it's important for people like the lady that called with her son having
What's the
issues.
opposite? What's the opposite?
Well, the opposite, and what we need to be a witness to. For instance, I'm just in the middle of this transition right now. I have my mother-in-law, who I really don't know at all. She was in a situation in another state where she was very sick. And she had been taken to the hospital 3 times. She was living on her own. We finally moved her out here, and she eventually got COVID. And so she's been going through the whole COVID recovery.
So you're dealing with a lady who is, to some extent, an invalid. I can imagine how that impacts you and your family. I have to press on, Don. Great talking to you, though. Thank you. I appreciate your phone call. Let's go to Tommy now in Miami. Hi, Tommy.
Hey, good morning, Patrick. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Okay, so let me see if I can unwrap this, what James was talking about. Okay, so there are things out there, and as I was telling the call screener, there is a video floating around. It's been out there for about, I've been watching it for more than 15 years. And it goes in, what you're talking about is race sustaining a race. Okay, so like you said, 2.1 children per family will sustain the race. One of the reasons why the United States isn't like Western Europe is because of the Latin American influx, and most Latin Americans do have multiple children. I was raised in South America. I know the demographics. So we're somewhere around, I think, 2.9, 3.0, somewhere in that. But if you look at if you extract, you know, the immigrant factor, I think the United States is around 1.6, 1.7. But my point that I wanted to make was that if you look into Western Europe, and James touched on it a little bit, but he didn't go into depth like he should have, because he's saying that they don't have something to refill, to fill that immigrant, you know, the dip in the birth rates, but they do.
Who's they? Who's the they you're talking about?
France, Germany, Italy, Spain, Portugal. If you look at France, France has a 1.1, child per family amongst, of natural-born Frenchmen. But if you look at the Muslim families in France, they're at 8.8. And this was, as I said, 10, 12 years ago. And Gaddafi had made a comment before he died that we will invade Europe and not fire one shot. And they're doing it. Germany, by 2059.
Okay. I follow what you're saying, but I just want to make sure we're clear on who we're talking about. So when you say they, you're referring to people from Libya or the Middle East, or you're referring to Muslims? Because obviously Muslims don't all come from the Middle East. When you say they, are you referring to those countries or to Muslims as such?
Muslims as such. Muslim immigrants to those countries. Because if you look at the immigration population into Spain, into France, into Italy, it isn't coming from South America. It isn't coming from Australia.
Yeah, I know. I've spent a lot of time in those countries, more so in Spain. But yeah, I'm familiar from being on the ground there. I know what you're talking about. Okay.
And what's going to happen is that you no longer are going to see. Germany was the one that they specifically were harping on, is that by, like I said, in 20, 30 years from now, it is going to be a majority Muslim country where you won't even recognize the demographics of Germany.
Yeah,
and there's
that
nothing they can
about
do
right.
about it.
Yeah,
it's
that
over.
Sounds
it's
about
like
right.
this is like you were speaking. This is like a ship moving, and you can't turn this. This is, takes hundreds of years to change these demographics. And
that's
they've been
my
doing
point.
This for and they've been doing this for a century.
Yeah.
And you know, and there is going to be something to take the place of that, and it's going to be Muslims in Europe. And if it were not for the immigration, so those of the people that are anti-immigrant in this country, we have them to thank that we do have the population that we do have here, because it's mainly been sustained by, like James had said, he asked that question about do they bring their and of course they
That's
bring
right.
their heritage and their conservatism and immigrant.
Hey, Tommy, I got to press on. I get the point you're saying. I'm overdue for a break, though, but I'm glad you called in. Interesting points that you're raising, and thank you. I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Well, this is appropriate music, Cyrus, given what happened today. You want to break the news?
Oh, people like hearing from you, Patrick, not me.
All right. Dusty Hill, the bassist with the American blues rock band ZZ Top, has died, according to the band's official website. He was 72. No cause of death listed at the moment, although they did say that he, about a week ago, was being treated for a hip issue. I don't know what that means. Was it a broken hip? Maybe it was. They haven't released the cause of death yet, but anyway.
That's like Tom Petty and Prince. Both of those were
Well, they're
taking, fentanyl to help with their hip pain.
Yes.
I want. Yes. Oh, I hope it's not. Hope it's not the same thing.
Yeah, Tom Petty. Man, what a waste of talent to die so early. He was 66 when he died, and he was suffering, as you say, Cyrus, with I think he had cracked his pelvis or something. He had fallen and hurt himself, and so he had, talk about chronic pain, and so he was seeking relief from the pain with painkillers and other drugs, some of them illicit drugs and alcohol, and eventually he just accidentally overdosed, and that was then the end. I believe Prince, something similar, right? Wasn't his overdose also accidental?
Yeah, I could be wrong, but from what I remember, they were exactly the same. It was the same drug. It was the same hip pain.
Yeah.
And they both went way too early.
Yeah, and you know, the God door here is, if you are a successful rock band bass player, which is the best instrument in the whole band anyway, obviously, that's what a bass player would say. Lots of money, lots of fame, lots of success, lots of women, lots of fast cars, lots of all that stuff. It makes you wonder, was there room for God? And so whenever I see somebody, a high profile person like that, especially people who are wealthy or they're big in the entertainment world, I say a prayer for them. And I don't know how many other people are praying for people like Dusty Hill, who's now gone, but it's a reminder to all of us. It should be a reminder to you, as it is for me, that your life will end at some point. And all of the glitz, let's say that you make it really big, and all of the glitz and the money and the fame and the nice things and the good food and all that, that all goes away. And whatever nice things you have, the houses or whatever, you don't take it with you, as the saying goes, and it goes to somebody else. And none of it really matters in the end, because you're now entering into eternity. And the question then is, have you been banking treasure in heaven, as Jesus talked about so often? That's all that will really matter at that point. So, yeah, say a prayer for him. Wouldn't it be interesting, Cyrus, if you got to heaven one day, and suddenly some people that you never really thought about much because they were just like big in the entertainment world or rock bands or something, and to find out that they had some sort of a dramatic conversion experience shortly before they died, you know, and then they're in heaven. I mean, could you imagine if you see Tom Petty in heaven? Whoa, Tom Petty, what are you doing in heaven? I thought you led a really wild life. Yeah, well, you know, people were praying for me, and I had a dramatic conversion shortly before I died. I believe we will meet people in heaven for whom that will be a reality.
That makes me smile just thinking about it.
Isn't that amazing? Well, anyway, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Joan in Plant City, Florida. Hi, Joan.
Good morning, Patrick. I have to tell you, I'm a fan of your program, and I learned about Relevant Radio because since COVID has taken place and people have gone into shutdown, especially the elderly. Mm-hmm. I have been a Eucharistic minister every day since the COVID. And I love your program. That's how I found it. And today it is overwhelming me because I feel like we're missing the whole concept of who we are and what is our obligation in life.
Okay, what is that?
I'm 68 years old, going on 69.
Okay.
And I was raised in a Catholic school by very Catholic parents, stayed very politically involved because my parents were very political. So,
well, tell me this. I'm fascinated by that, but you said that I'm missing something. I'm very curious to know what it is I'm missing.
Okay, what we're missing is, it sounds like today's program, it sounds like we have the answer to all of these problems. We have got to stop discussing problems, especially like the problems today, because we're not of the secular mindset. And this sounds very secular to me today.
Well, you don't have to be of a secular mindset to discuss problems that are going on in the world. In fact, was Pope John Paul II having a secular mindset when he wrote Evangelium Vitae, which was a whole encyclical devoted to this problem and others like it? He wrote a whole encyclical about it. Was he of a secular mindset?
Well, no, but I am saying today it's so doom and gloom that I think, well, you know, it's like years and years ago, I felt like our priest should be speaking at the pulpit, give so much time to the truth about the Catholic faith and why they're Catholics, because they're not getting it elsewhere, even in the CCD program. They should touch on the Catholic catechism. And
yeah, which we do.
We do. Okay, so most people do not even know, really, because I am out in the public every day.
But Joan, I'm confused now. You said that I'm really missing something, and I'm not sure what it is that
what
you think I'm missing.
What the answer to all of our problems are. We don't have to be taken down. We talk about the future. We talk about the future. We talk mm-hmm. about the future, where we're heading. And I mm-hmm. understand where we're heading, because like I said, when I was 19, I was fighting.
But what am I missing? What is the thing that I'm missing
the
in this
rosary,
program today?
The messages of our Blessed Mother. Atheistic communism would cover the entire globe. And yeah. it would happen because we did not fulfill the messages that were asked of her at Fatima.
Well, I'm glad to know that you like the program. I really am, Joan. And I'm confident that if you've listened to this program for any length of time, you've heard me a million and one times talk about the importance of the rosary and how people should pray the rosary every day. It's front and center on this program. And I personally don't think that there's anything wrong with looking at a problem like Pope John Paul II did in analyzing problems like this in an Evangelium Vitae and proposing the solution. And you'll notice that Pope John Paul II, he proposed more solutions than just praying the rosary. Praying the rosary is important, but there's more to it than that. And there's nothing wrong with discussing
definitely.
It. Yeah.
Definitely.
So we're discussing the problem, Joan. That it's a real problem. It's really affecting people. You know, this is a life and death issue. It is important. Is it doom and gloom? Yeah, it is. But sometimes you have to deal with problems like that. Otherwise, you're going to live with more doom and more gloom if people just stick their, you know, heads in the sand and don't pay attention to what's going on. I think.
Oh, I've been reading about this population thing since I was 19. So mm-hmm. I know all of this. I'm 69, going on 69 this month. I know about all this stuff, and this could have all been handled if we would have stand as a united Catholic Church years ago.
I agree. But it wasn't. It didn't happen, Joan. So I mean, it'd be nice if we had wings and could fly, but we don't. So the point is, we have to deal with reality as it is. And that's the reason why talking about this problem is so important. People have to know what's going on so they can be part of the solution, which, yes,
say
does include
rosary.
Praying the rosary.
Say the rosary yeah. and go to the Eucharist. Say the rosary and go to the Eucharist, in front of the Eucharist every day, and go to make your visits, and you will be the prayer warrior that will take care of all these problems, because yeah. that's what we need.
I agree, Joan, but see, it's not just that. I'm a both-and approach. I take a both-hand approach to this, not an either-or.
Oh,
it's not
I do
either.
Too.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad we're on the same page.
I mean, I'm a warrior. I'm a warrior and have been forever, and I'm a Trump warrior.
I can
warrior.
Imagine.
But the thing is, this thing today is disturbing, because maybe you could end and say, "Don't forget your prayer in the Eucharist," because that is the answer to all of this,
yeah.
and we can take care of the problem today. It doesn't
no.
have to be this way in 30 years
no.
or 20 years. We need
no.
to be positive that we are going to handle the problem today.
Joan, that's simply not true.
Over with.
That's not true. If you encourage people to pray the rosary, that's good, and I agree with you. And we should always do that, and to go to the Eucharist. I agree with that. But it's not as though those are the sole remedies for the problem. There are other remedies. Like Pope John Paul II said, one of them is to be open to life. That
exactly.
has to be part.
Amen.
Well,
Amen.
I think we're kind of talking around each other now, Joan. Anyway, I appreciate your passion. I'm glad you listened to the program. I'm sorry that today is rubbing you the wrong way, but sometimes, you know, we have to talk about topics that may not be as peachy keen as we would like to otherwise. Thank you, Joan. Let's go now to Joseph in Oaklawn, Illinois. Hi, Joseph.
Good morning, sir. Thank you for taking my call. The geographic change, it seems to me, has more than just one benefit for the left and for those who would like to see the country fall, is there's more babies they can murder. As more people come, there's going to be those who will get abortions, and I believe that is what they're thinking of, along with the geographic change, so they basically have a larger voter base. It's just their sinister plan,
and I truly believe
when
that
you say they,
nothing.
Who is they?
Mm-hmm. The Democrats, the left, Planned Parenthood, those that survive economically by the murder of innocents, those types, they're going to make even more money. I think it's a $1 billion business already, and that's just in the United States. And
that's just Planned Parenthood. That doesn't even count all the mom and pop abortion clinics and how much money they make. You're right. Well, here's an interesting thing. You'll notice, Joseph, that there is this massive push on the left for more or less unrestricted immigration into this country. Now, I believe in immigration. I believe we should welcome immigrants. I believe we have to do the right thing. What would Jesus do? I'm firmly committed to all of that and the church's social justice teachings on this issue. However, just look at this politically, and perhaps you already have. You'll notice that the people of that persuasion, the people who buy into, let's say, the platform that the Democratic Party promotes, that includes abortion, it includes the contraceptive mentality. And so, by and large, those people tend not to have large families. They hold to a sterile ideology, and it's reflected in their own sterility, their own lack of having children. So this is something that I've seen studied before. I think you'll find this fascinating, Joseph, and that is studies have been done. I've read at least one in which they've shown how many more Democrats there would be if Democrats just tended to have children and didn't promote abortion. There would be more of them. They could win elections more easily because there'd be more of them. They'd be raising their children with Democratic Party ideals. So the likelihood of them winning more elections would go up. But because they're so into abortion, generally speaking, they're not having children of their own. Where are they going to get more Democrats from? Immigration. And so when you have people who come from wherever they're coming from, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to necessarily be from Latin America. But when they're coming in and they're being ramrodded into citizenship, which is the dream of many people on the left, to make them citizens immediately if possible, then suddenly now you have a whole new group of people who are going to be beholden to your political party, because not only did you furnish them with citizenship, but also all the freebies that go along with it. Of course, they realize there's going to be a kind of quid pro quo when it comes to the ballot box. That's another reason why it's so horrible the way in which immigration as a human problem has been politicized and turned into even really a weapon that they're wielding very effectively.
That's incredible. And that's you said it perfectly. That is, they're just, you said it very eloquently, but that's what they're doing. And it's very sad. And some of these families, even though they may think, I'm just speculating here, mm-hmm. but as life perhaps gets a little bit better and maybe the money's flowing in, there's, you know, you're both working, your spouse and yourself, and then you get pregnant, maybe, well, you know, we already had 4 kids or 5 kids. We can just go ahead. It's easy. We just go up the street to Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago.
You're talking about an abortion, like having an abortion?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how sad it is.
It's just like what you. I'm sorry.
No. I was just commenting on your point, which is how sad that is because we have it easy right now and we don't really want any more children. That would be a burden. So let's get rid of this one. How sad, how tragic that is.
It is. It is tragic. And then the New Mexico policy that Biden turned around after Trump stopped it. I mean, all of these things add up and it's just pathetic. And quite frankly,
well, you know, that changes from. I understand. And that changes, just to be fair here, that changes from administration to administration. That's been going on since Reagan. So when there's a Republican in office, the Mexico City policy kicks in. When a Democrat is elected, it's ignored and it's reversed. So it's just like a revolving door back and forth. Here's a question to ponder, Joseph. All the people who are being, you know, facilitated to come into this country illegally, and then being dispersed by the government around the country and resettled and such, if they realized that these people would almost to a man vote Republican and pro-life, do you think that they would be so gung-ho about immigration?
Of course not. Yeah, they're thinking of themselves. Yeah.
And by the way,
and to your point, the COVID that they're spreading throughout the nation when they're flying, immigrants, illegal aliens, quite frankly, to other cities, Massachusetts. They're flying them everywhere, and then those areas are heightening their COVID cases and hospitalizations. What they never tell you, that's the reason. And that is...
Yeah, you know, there. We talked... Actually, it's interesting you mention it, because we talked on the program this morning about local reporting along the Rio Grande in the... well, it's being reported out of DFW, but about how... families coming in from Latin America who have COVID apparently are not being required, and those who don't have COVID are not being required by the federal government or by the border control to get a vaccination. They're just being moved on, moved into the general population. And I don't want anyone to get the idea that I'm promoting the Republican Party. I'm not promoting the Republican Party. I'm not shilling for any political group or candidate or anything like that. That's the farthest thing from my mind. I want nothing to do with that stuff, honestly. But we have to face the facts and recognize that the way in which the means by which people are being allowed to come into this country. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio. Don't you listen to
what the man says. Well, a quick... excusez-moi about what happened a minute ago. We had a little glitch. I don't know what happened, but I'm back. I'm live. And my number is 888-914-9149. We'll go now to Kathleen in San Luis Obispo. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I was telling your screener that there's two things, actually. The first one is I don't feel that we're being taught a lot of the things that fortunately my parents taught us in our house growing up. You know, for years growing up, my parents would say, you know, just offer it up whenever I was having difficulties or, you know, hurt feelings, you know, name it, offer it up. And I never understood fully what that meant. And I now, suffering and love are actually married together in many ways. I mean, obviously, God so loved the world that he, you know, gave up his only son for us out of love. But when we embrace the cross, that we become closer to God, and in people's suffering, other people are able to, you know, help the sick, help the dying. They're able to pour out love in that way. And that's another reason why this is so intrinsically evil, is it cuts off love, not just...
That what is intrinsically evil?
You know, God's grace, not just in, like, you know, assisted suicide and abortion. It cuts off the ability for us to receive these gifts from God and to offer our love in these difficult situations.
I want to make sure I understand, when you say these things do that, are you referring to abortion? I want to make sure I know what you're referring to.
Suicide. I have two children with disabilities, and I wouldn't have it any other way. It's been hard, but it's made me a better parent. I've gained more compassion, more empathy. I've met wonderful people that I probably would have never met and had in my life. Mm-hmm. And when it's just, if I were to have aborted them, or, you know, God forbid, if I have like a terminal disease and I want them to, you know, end my life for me, I'm not just cutting off, I'm not just killing, you know, sinning against, you know, the Holy Spirit. I'm cutting off that love that they could be giving me through, you know, a corporal work of mercy,
That's true.
You know,
think about all the women who have had abortions and maybe as they reach the latter part of their lives and don't have any children. Just imagine for those women what it's like to know that if they had allowed their unborn children to live, that they would have children surrounding them now and very likely grandchildren. And when I ponder what the loneliness must be like for people in that situation, and maybe they've repented, but the remains of their decisions or the results of their decisions remain. And to even just for their own peace of mind and knowing that you have people around you who love you, they're not here because of those decisions that were made long ago.
Right. So, we're like focused so much on the, I don't think I can afford another child. I don't think I can, you know, it means I won't be able to take more vacations. It means, you know, I might have to take a lesser job at my company, but it means you don't have that one more soul to love.
That's right. And
to see someone, not just at all stages of life. And, you know, I don't feel I know some parishes are really good at this, but, you know, you have these priests that are really resolute about teaching the faith and teaching the catechism, and they get some backlash from the diocese because they're too harsh. We need that. I mean, we're dealing with some very difficult things, you know, in these times, and, you know, a watered down message doesn't help anyone cope with these
things. That's true. And there's always got to be a balance, Kathleen. There's always got to be a balance. So harshness, you've heard the old saying, you can catch more flies with honey than you can with vinegar. And it's true. So harshness is not a good thing in a priest. Fervor is, vigor is, courage in making the case for what is true. All those things are good, but those things can be done in a powerful and vigorous way without being harsh. And I think nowadays some people have confused harshness, you know, telling it like it is, and I'm going to call them what I really think of them. That's not the same thing as being really effective in teaching the faith. In fact, in many ways, priests who do that, I think they undercut their own effectiveness. To whatever degree they had some effectiveness, they undercut it by being harsh or stringent. And so I would just simply say, agreeing with what you were saying a minute ago, that in the pastoral setting, speaking the truth in love is the key. Doesn't mean you can't be vigorous, doesn't mean you can't be forthright. We should be those things, but we can't brutalize people. And one of the unfortunate side effects, I think, Kathleen, to kind of build upon what you were saying, a phenomenon that we're witnessing in this country, is that many people, out of an understandable frustration with what has been going on in the country, whether politically or religiously, what has happened in this country over decades with the church. We can think about scandals and many ways to look at this, but the frustration that has been pent up in many people and the I'm not going to take it anymore kind of attitude that many people have understandably sort of built up, when somebody comes along, you know, some firebrand priest who comes along and he's, you know, telling it like it is and he's putting people in their place, they can confuse that with actual pastoral appropriate way of speaking the truth vigorously, but not harshly. And this is one thing I keep coming back to in my own thoughts about this. Thank you, Kathleen. I appreciate it. Jesus was not harsh with the people that he was teaching. He had some harsh things to say for the Pharisees, that's for sure. Read Matthew chapter 23 if you want to get a big dose of that. But he was not harsh in general. He was firm and vigorous, yes, but he was also loving. So it seems like if we're going to have success, pastorally speaking, and that's not up to me because I'm not a pastor, I'm not a priest, But for those who are, the more they can take that Christ-like approach to these issues and speak the truth in love, the better it is and the more effective it is, it seems to me. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Mark in Appleton, Wisconsin. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. It took a while, but I'm here. I just wanted to call and let you know that last year I almost died. I thought I was. I went to the emergency room 4 times in 1 week. And the last night of my stay at the hospital, my son was with me. And I promised Mother Mary I would go to Mass for a whole year without missing a day. The following week on Thursday night, I went to confession. I went to Mass, and today I celebrated my 1 year anniversary Mass.
That's wonderful. Praise God.
And Mama Mary is really taking care of me. And I was listening to that Joan that called a while back. She really wants us to pray the rosary. She gave me signs. I used to pray 8 to 10 rosaries a day. A few times I prayed 15, and that took me about 5 hours.
Well, and it's good to pray the rosary, that's for sure.
One of my rosaries turned colors blue.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you're praying the rosary, Mark, and praise God for the success with your healing. That's wonderful. Thank you. Let's go now to let's go to Jake in Cranberry, Pennsylvania. Hi, Jake.
Good morning, Patrick. Boy, the caller before the last one, what a beautiful lady. And I think maybe a matter of semantics saying the priest should be more harsh. You know, you've recommended Dr. James Dobson's book, Love Must Be Tough. And maybe that's more what she was saying. You know, you don't want the priest swearing and yelling at you. However, we do have to get the point across, because I don't think a lot of priests these days are getting the point across. And that might be their particular leanings that might be doing that. I read the story that you read about immigration on the border and COVID and all the things that go along with that. My wife is a social worker, and in the Diocese of Pittsburgh, they have brought the kids here to the places that they have. I don't want to mention any names, but part of the deal is Catholic Charities and the Catholic Church are bringing them in and then getting subsidized by the government for bringing them in, because now they have, you know, basically orphan kids that they have to take care of. Well, the government helps them take care of that. So not only we're getting hurt on the face of it by bringing infected people into this country through Catholic Charities, and then on the backside of it, we're paying for it with our tax dollars, which we know that as a country, we don't have any money. We have-
right. James, or Jake, excuse me, I understand how this works. So I get the process. Oh. And what was the point you wanted to make?
How is Catholic Charities connected to the Catholic Church, or are they?
They are. Catholic Charities, on a diocese-by-diocese basis, they operate under the aegis of the bishop. So it would be one of the departments within that diocese and answerable to the bishop, and that budget would be subsumed within the larger budget of the diocese. So from a, I guess you might say, from a legal standpoint, that's the connection. And there may be other Catholic Charities that are independent of a diocese. So I'm thinking, you know, I'm trying to think of an example. But there are some that would be independent of a single diocese, but they would have a connection with the church as a whole, maybe at the national level, for example. But that being the case, what about that?
Well, I'm just looking at we're consolidating, we're closing churches, we're closing schools. while we're spending money to do things. Everybody feels bad for immigrants from wherever, but our diocese is paying to bring kids in while we're making it harder for Catholic families here in the United States to go to a Catholic school. And I don't see that as being
that, that may
right,
be true
correct
in,
or
in,
anything.
That may be true in many places. I know some dioceses where it's not true because they subsidize the education for Catholic schools for parishioners, which is good. And some parishes do the
yes.
same thing. If you're a registered parishioner and you give money every week, then you get free tuition. If only that were more prevalent, though, Jake. I've got to run. Thank you, though. Good to talk to you. I'll be back with Hour 3 right after this, including your phone calls. The number is 888-914-9149. I'll be right back.